afternoon. We have one of our older honored members that is visiting with us this afternoon, are here with us this afternoon, and we're glad she's here. Welcome everybody, and if you are otherwise a visitor, we hope you want to come back and be with us often. Tonight we're going to talk about the idea we've been looking at and quoting from and so forth, Proverbs 22, verse 6, quite a bit. You'll notice in Proverbs 22 and verse 1, there are times in the Old Testament, Ecclesiastes 7 verse 1 comes to mind as well, but when God speaks of having a good name, and so in the King James Version, Proverbs 22 verse 1, a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. Loving favor, of course, rather than silver and gold. But a good name, or a reputation, a good reputation. And I want to talk about this evening a little bit about the idea of not just having a reputation. We've all, probably all to some degree with some people have a reputation. But the idea of more of earning a reputation. Earning it, and whether that is, the reputation you have is fair or not, whether it's deserved or undeserved. So we're going to talk about that. Because, you know, reaching milestones in life, I said this morning that I was nearing, at least, and felt the idea of turning 60. I think that's a fair milestone. A lot of people, when they turn 30, 40, 50, 60, older, you know, every decade that passes, that's kind of a milestone. And I believe that as a Christian, maybe for everybody, but certainly for a Christian, it calls for a time of reflection. Where are you in life? Where do you need to be in life? What have you done with your life? I think about those kinds of things. What kind of reputation do you have with people? What kind of reputation have you earned? It's not always the, you know, the same thing. But just asking simply, if you were to reflect upon your life and say, what am I known for? I'm going to kind of refer to that statement a few times, that question throughout the lesson. What do people know me for? When they think of Michael White, what do they think? What comes to mind readily? That kind of thing. Because a reputation is important. We can find statements often in the Bible. If we turn back to the book of Job, I think we all know that the book of Job starts off by telling us Job was a great man. And I'll just read it. Job chapter 1, verse 1. There was a man in the land of Uz or Uz, however you want to pronounce that. His name was Job. And that man, it says, was perfect. In other words, he was a whole man. He was all that man was supposed to be. He was perfect and upright. And one that feared God or respected God. And one that eschewed or hated, disdained evil. So he was a good person. And you know the story of Job. And this is not about Job tonight, so I won't get off on that. But you know the story of Job. How that Satan challenged God. And that everybody was sinful. And God, basically, we would assume, picked the best example of a human being and said, well, have you considered my servant Job? That was Job's reputation. Now, of course, Satan tried to label Job, and that really introduces this lesson very well. He tried to label Job as somebody that bargained for that service to God. You know, Satan challenged, he wouldn't serve you, he wouldn't be what he is or do what he does if you didn't pay him off. Now, that's a paraphrase, but that's really what he's saying. And though we come to find out that Job was not perfect, but at the same time, he follows God, obeys God, does what he does, because it is what Job is willing to do no matter what. There's another person that stands out to me. We watched a movie at the movie night a couple, 3 weeks back, and we talked about Daniel. And Daniel, in chapter 6, this figured into that movie. In fact, it figured prominently in that movie. I'd like you to turn with me to Daniel 6. Now, let's note some things about Daniel, because this really gets at the heart of what I want to talk about. Remember the history here very briefly, that Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians had conquered Judah, the capital city, Jerusalem, in three groups, major groups. They had taken people back to Babylon, and Daniel was in that first group. And Daniel will be in captivity. He will be one of the few that is in captivity for 70 full years. And you may remember that nearing the end of that time, maybe about 3 years before, that the Medo-Persian Empire conquered Babylon and basically inherited all those captives like Daniel. And very quickly, Daniel gains a close relationship, or at least a well-respected individual by Darius the Mede. Now that brings us to Daniel 6. And because Daniel is a captive and he's just a Jew and all of that, but because he is so well trusted by Darius, then there are other people, maybe natural Medes or Persians, who don't like that. And they're seeking to do something about Daniel. We've got to get Daniel out of the way because we want to be in his position. I'm sure we can relate to that. Where someone doesn't like us, not because we're not doing a good job, but we're in the way, you know, that kind of thing. So if you look at Daniel chapter 6 and go down with me to verse 4, and this stands out to me, because again, we're talking about reputation tonight. It says, the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom. I always found that interesting. They were looking for something. How can we charge him? What can we do? How can we have something against him? What can we carry to the king? So they sought to find an occasion against Daniel. But they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. I don't think the Bible is saying there that he's a perfect individual. He never does anything wrong. It's just that his sins or his faults certainly are not egregious ones, and they're certainly not in betrayal of the king. He may be human, but he does his job faithfully. He does his job as he should. He can be trusted. What do you know Daniel for? You can count on Daniel. You can trust Daniel. And so this is what they said in verse 5. Then said these men, will not find any occasion against Daniel except, and I'm just going to add the words in here because this is what they really mean, except we can invent one and find it against him concerning the law for his God. In other words, he's going to be faithful. And he's going to be faithful regardless. And if you're going to find something against Daniel, you're going to have to invent something and put obeying the king up against obeying God, and he'll be faithful. You know Daniel for that. You can count on Daniel for that. He'll be faithful to his God and will get it. And that's exactly right. What they say there is true. Daniel will be faithful to God, and the story goes on to unfold, and you know it. There was a decree made by the king, being it the law of the Persians. It couldn't be changed. No one was to pray or anything like that. Well, when it came time to pray, Daniel prayed. And he didn't hide about it. He didn't try to, you know, do it in such a way nobody would know or anything out. He opened the curtains of his house. He faced Jerusalem. He prayed. And so they got it. They took that to the king, and that's what they got him. But what do you come away from that knowing? Well, Daniel's got a reputation. And even his enemies know he'll be faithful to his God. And therefore, he's got a reputation as far as that is concerned, and you can count on it. What do you know Daniel for? You're not going to get him on anything else. If you can have that kind of reputation, you're doing something. You know, if somebody will say that about you, that guy, that girl is going to be faithful no matter what. If they can say that about you, then you've got something. And the Bible gives us a number of examples of really good people. Going through the book of Acts, I mean, we might come to chapter 9 and see Dorcas, or Tabitha, if you prefer. And she was so well known. She was charitable. She was good. She did things for people. She was known for that. When she died, a lot of people mourned her and wept over her because of all the good she had done. She was a good person. Cornelius was a good person. And he was so good that the angel came to him, remember, in chapter 10, and said, you know what? God has taken notice of you and all the things you do. You pray, you give alms, you respect God, etc. And because of that, well, we're going to get somebody here to teach you the truth. And, of course, Peter went there. Or Ananias. Remember the guy that baptized the Apostle Paul? Ananias, it is said of him, Paul says of him, in chapter 22, when he's relating that story, he talks about how good Ananias was and how he stood out even among his fellow Jews for being an honorable person and all of that. If we were to go to the book of Hebrews, you might want to turn over there and just look at Hebrews chapter 11. We know it as the great chapter on faith, and some people know it as the great chapter of examples of faith, and it is those things. But notice how it starts. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, for by it, by faith, including Daniel that we talked about, the elders obtained a good report, a good reputation. So what am I saying in all of that? I'm saying that we go through life, we make choices, we reach milestones, we reflect. We look back on the last decade, we look back on the past whatever number of years we've lived. And it doesn't have to be that you reach that decade. It can be any other milestone. You get married, a lot of people. You have your first child, a lot of people. You're baptized, certainly. You become a Christian. And we reflect. Where am I? Where do I need to be? What kind of person am I? What kind of reputation do I have? Why do I have the reputation that I do? Is it fair? Is it unfair? What do I need to be doing? Do I need to change anything? Or am I really living the way I'm supposed to be living? Those are fair questions and questions that I think we need to answer. Now, when we turn in the Bible, and I'd like for you to go with me to Romans chapter 14. Remember back when we were talking about Romans 14 through the beginning of 15, and we were talking about the way people treated each other and going through it, the hard passage. I think Romans is the hardest book in the Bible, personally. It can be the deepest. And there are so many, you know, different ways you can go as you try to interpret what Paul is saying. Paul was talking about the way you treated each other. And one of the things that he said, if you look down in verse 16, is a principle that I think stands on its own. It can apply certainly to this matter here, but it can apply across the board. You'll notice when Paul says, let not then, and then being based on how you treat other people, etc., but let not then your good be evil spoken of. Most people, I'm not sure every individual, there are rare exceptions of some real monsters in this world, and in our lives, and certainly in history. But aside from those, most people, I think we would say, most people, there's some good about, there's some bad about. There are things where they are exactly what they ought to be, and there are other things where they're exactly not what they should be. For a Christian, that's very difficult. Because for a Christian, he or she can always, they can always sit down and make a list. And if they were to put the good qualities on one side and the bad qualities on the other, and be honest about it, you know, they're not overly prideful, they're not, you know, they're not faulting themselves where they should be. They're just honest about it. I think we'd come up with a pretty good list of good qualities, good things about me, and bad things about me. And if we went beyond that, I think what we probably know is that other people realize. I mean, truthfully, overall, I might be a good person. Or overall, I might be a bad person. And even if someone, let's say I'm a good person, even if someone is willing to say, if my name comes up, you know, what do you think about Michael White? Oh, he's a good guy. If that's the first thing that just naturally pops out of your mouth, then that's what people know. But at the same time, if you were to dig further and have a conversation about Michael White, and if you knew me, and knew me well, you'd have to admit, one or two things. You'd have to admit there's some things that are not good. Or things that I need to work on. Or things I could get better in. That kind of thing. And the same goes for a bad person. And we do that sometimes. We may talk about a person we think is bad, but, you know, there's some good things. I mean, you could say about that person so and so or such and such. The point is, for a Christian, I am supposed to be a good person. I am supposed to always be getting better. My reputation or my report, if you will, a good report, what people say about me, how people view me, if they're fair about it. It should be better and better all the time. As I reach those milestones, people that know me should be able to look at me and say, well, you know, you've gotten better at so-and-so. You may not be perfect at it, but you're better at it. And I should be getting better and stronger and more mature. That ought to be the way my life goes. So generally, we gain a reputation or we earn one based on those things. It's based on, one, the overall perception that people have. You know, how we're known, what they know us for, what comes to mind when somebody mentions our name. There is that. If you'll notice, if you go up to someone who knows an individual and you say, what do you think about so-and-so? They're not, let me think for a while. You know, that's a hard one. If it is, that's a pretty, you know, that person needs to work on some things. Because generally speaking, when you ask, what do you think about so-and-so? They're a pretty quick response. And the reason there is because they have a reputation. They have something that can be reported. People know them for things. When their name comes up in a conversation, there's an immediate thought that springs out. And people will say that. And so we say those things like, yeah, pretty good guy. Or we say things like, they have convictions. When we talk about our overall reputation, we've earned it, we deserve it, etc., a lot of times that's for convictions. Now, what do we mean by convictions? Well, what we really stand for. You know, what we really believe in and we stand for, and other people see it. Other people see us unwavering about so-and-so. If you're known for standing for the truth, preachers get that reputation or not. And if you're known as an individual who stands for what's in the Bible and won't waver on it, people learn that, and people will say that very quickly. Oh, yeah, boy, he, you know, you're not going to get him to move away from that. It's kind of like Daniel. We're not going to get him on anything other than what he stands for, what he's convicted about. Now, there are preachers that get that. There are Christians that get that reputation. There are parents. We're talking about this quarter, the whole idea of the home and the parents, and we were this morning. There are parents that get their reputation even with their kids. They're not going to budge. I can go to them and I can beg and plead and cry and everything else, and they are not going to budge on this. They won't move on this. You get a reputation for your convictions. And you get a reputation for your, and I'm going to stress it, repeated action. Not for the one-time mess-ups, the aberrant behavior. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about what you repeat. What a person would say if you had a conversation about Michael White, what you would know that I do, that I repeat. In other words, this is what he is, this is what he does. And this is the way you can pretty much count on him to be. And so we use phrases like that. We say, that's not like him, that's not like her. In other words, when there is some of that aberrant behavior, when it's out of the norm, when it's not what you normally see out of that person, you know something is wrong, quote unquote. You know, the person that's generally happy, you know, got a smile on their face, when they don't have it, you immediately think something's wrong. Maybe even something bad has happened. Because that's not them. That's not like him. That's not like her. Or when we can say, when a person says, you know, like Demosthenes, I think is his name, or Diogenes, I get the two of them mixed up, but the one that was looking for the honest man said he couldn't find one, you know. When a person is honest, when that subject comes up, then what springs to your mind is a person that's honest. And they're known for that. And you can count on them for that. You know, we'll say things like, for example, when someone has been a great friend to you, always there for you, always standing by your side when you need them the most, you know what you're going to say? You can count on so-and-so for being a great friend. It's that kind of thing. So, we earn a reputation generally by someone's overall perception, either good, you're bad, or whatever. But dig a little deeper and you're known for your convictions and you're known for the action you repeat or what the normal course of action is. Now, again, what am I known for? Where do I stand? As I reach more milestones in my life, as I've not stood. Whether I'm known for or I'm not known for. Where? What do people think? And far more importantly, what does God think? Because the Bible speaks often of God and His perception of people. Sometimes that perception is not the same as other human beings. I'll give you a case in point. A lot of times when I say the name David, there are people who will immediately run to David was an adulterer. David was a murderer. And they will think of that, and that's how they will look at him, and they will consider him always. But if I said to God, David, do you know God's perception of David? A man, somebody was saying, a man after God's own heart. Now, does that fit with everything he ever did? Of course not. No, he made bad mistakes, big mistakes. But look at his life as a whole. Take his life as a whole. What is he known for? He's known for staying with God. When he strayed away from God, he comes back to God. He's known at times for being very courageous. He's known at times for being very weak. But the overall perception, that's David. So when we talk about someone's reputation, it's not always deserved. If we were to say, if I said to you, David, and the first thing that comes to your mind is adulterer or murderer, you would be talking about a short little time in the life of David compared to a whole life. And it would not be deserved. I mean, to look only at that and think only of that is not what he deserves. He deserves far more than that. And I think most of us understand, not all of us understand that. But you can have an undeserved bad rep, if you will. Why don't you go with me to 1 Peter? Because Peter talks a lot about that, and I find it interesting. Do you remember the first time Peter came to Jesus? Or rather, Jesus came to him. and when Jesus, you know, sent him out in the boat. They fished all night, hadn't caught anything, sent him out. He catches a miraculous load of fishes, comes back in. And Peter's idea is, Luke, if we went over to the book of Luke, Peter's idea is, depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. Now, I don't know what Peter had done, and you've heard me say that before. The Bible doesn't tell us of his sins, how many sins, how long he lived sinfully, or anything like that. But Peter's own perception was, I'm a sinful man, and I don't deserve to be in the presence of God, and that's obviously who you are. I don't deserve to be here. And of course, Jesus' perception of Peter is, boy, there's a lot of good about you, Peter, and I can use that. We're going to get you turned around, and then you're going to be an apostle. And so it's two different perceptions going on there. But I find it interesting that that's Peter, and then Peter will have a lot to say about what I'm about to talk about for a few minutes before I close this lesson. And that is when you have an undeserved reputation. And it can be an undeserved reputation because you've been bad, and it can be an undeserved reputation because you've been good. And if you look with me at 1 Peter 4, I think you begin to see that. Go with me to verse 1 of chapter 4, when he says, for as much then as Christ has suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves likewise with the same mind, for he that has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, and that he no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh to the lust of men, but to the will of God. Now, I want you to stop right there and notice something. Here is Peter, depart from me, O Lord, I'm a sinful man. So he had a period of time where he's a sinful person. He's exactly the one for God to choose to say this right here, because he's had a period of life that was sinful and he left it behind. That's exactly what he's talking about. You make a choice, you quit the sinning, and you start living for the Lord. That's exactly what he's talking about in verse 2. Notice verse 3. For the time past of our life may suffice us, or that may have been sufficient to me, to have worked the will of the Gentiles when we walk in lasciviousness, lust, excess of wine, revelings, banquetings, abominable idolatries. And if I were to put that in modern terms, and I'd say it like this, because this is what the terminology is saying. There may have been a time in my life when I might have partied,
and lusted and fornicated and all those things that people do to have, quote unquote, a good time. There may have been that time in our past. And that may have been Peter's past. We don't know. But that was the time past. You know, if a person only knew me when I was 15 years old, you might not believe the reputation that I would have. But that's way back then. You know, that's a different life, as we sometimes say. Let's go on with what Peter says here. Wherein they, that is people out in the world, they think it strange that you run not with them to the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you. Now you can take that two ways, and I think both fit. I think it especially fits for the person who once did so and so. Occasionally, I will run into someone I knew a long time ago who knows that now I'm a preacher and who will remind me of what I used to do. Well, what am I going to say to that? Yeah, you're right. But I don't do that anymore. And sometimes they'll look at you kind of weird, you know. Well, how do you go from being that to preaching to other people? I love it when they ask that question. I mean, I love it. I said, let me tell you about it. Because I want to talk to you about Jesus, and I want to talk to you about what Jesus can do for your life. That's usually where the conversation ends, you know. But the point is, you can take it for that, but you can also take it for the individual that never lived that excess of riot, and it fits just as well when that person holds to their convictions, maybe out in the workplace or out in life in general, and somebody says, come on, let's do this. And you're not trying to be mean or, you know, anything else. You just simply are not going to do that, and so you excuse yourself. Sometimes in those situations, people will begin to give you a hard time about it. And when they begin to give you a hard time about it, they think you are a strange individual because you don't march to the same step as, quote unquote, everybody else does. And they'll mock and make fun. And I think Peter is talking about that, exactly that as well. And so, he says, they'll speak evil of you, who shall give account to him that is ready to judge the living and the dead. For this cause was the gospel preached, etc. And that's exactly right. Those people that are making fun and mocking and putting you down and saying, oh yeah, well you used to be such and such and you know you're no better than me and all of that kind of thing. All of us, and they included, are one day going to give account to God. And that's why the passage that Ekhon read for us, let's go back to chapter 2 for a moment and look again at what he says in verses 11 and 12. Dearly beloved, I beg you, as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts that war against the soul. Having your conversation, the way you live is the idea. Having your conversation honest or honorable among the Gentiles. Whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may buy your good works, which they will behold. They're watching you, and you can rest assured, if someone's mocking you and making fun, they're watching every move you make. They're ready to pounce when you make a mistake. And they shall behold your good works. And notice what he says here. Glorify God in the day of visitation. You know, on the day of judgment, there isn't going to be any mocking and making fun. On the day of judgment, there isn't going to be any false charges. On the day of judgment, they are not going to think you were strange or weird or whatever because you chose to follow Christ rather than the way of the world. On the day of judgment, they are going to wish they had done the same. And that's what Peter is getting at here. Because you see, you gain or you earn a reputation for what you do, what you stick to, and what you live by. Sometimes you gain a good reputation when someone says, yeah, that person, you count on them for that. You know, that's a good person. But not everybody does that. Sometimes people just think you're a nut. And that's okay, too. Because Because deep down inside, what's important is that I live like I know to live. That I respect myself. That God respects me. That God looks to me as a good person. And that good people do the same. That's what's important. So you can gain a bad reputation with people in the world. You know, it's like walking up to somebody in at a funeral home, you know, seeing a preacher who stands for the truth and say, oh, you're that zealot. Okay, fine. What does that mean? That preacher stands for the truth? Great. You know? But to a lot of other people, because they won't bend and give and compromise according to the times, then that's just a zealot. Or it may be that a person gets a bad reputation for just standing against what's wrong. And they take a stand. If you're the kind of person that is walking into work every day, walking around and pointing a finger at every single person there and saying, you're wrong and going to hell for that, you're wrong and going to hell for that, you're not going to get very far in life. You know, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, how you can be in a group of people and people know you're a Christian and they know if they tell a bad joke, you really don't want to hear part of it. Or if they're gossiping about somebody and they're running somebody down, you just, you know, I don't want to hear this. I really don't need to hear this. Or whatever, something like that. And they're laughing at you behind your back and you know it. Or they're saying things like, oh, you know so-and-so. He's not going to let you get away with anything. She won't let you get away with that. You know, if a person is running down a friend of mine and I don't want to hear it, and that person says, oh, you know, so-and-so, she won't let you get away with that, I figure that's a good thing, not a bad thing. But you get that kind of reputation. People draw false conclusions based on the way you look, on your outward appearance. We could go to 2 Corinthians. I won't tonight. We have, though. And we can see people making fun of Paul. You know, he didn't talk all that well. His speech was contemptible, I think the King James said. He didn't look too good. In outward appearance, he looked to be weak. And if history tells us anything, he was kind of, in his old age, slumping over a little bit. He was bald, and he was a small-framed man, and all of that. We don't try to think of Paul that way, but that's what history would tell us anyway, be it right or wrong. But that's the kind of person that people begin to associate the way somebody looks or the way somebody talks with someone being weak. I don't think any of us would say Paul was weak. Paul was not weak. And the point is, you are not weak just because you look a certain way. Because you're not loud and boisterous and always, you know, trying to put yourself forward as being it. You know what I'm saying? Then sometimes people look at you and, well, you know, that person's kind of a milquetoast. They don't stand for anything. No. Sometimes people are just simply reserving the time to stand for a real time when they need to stand. I've often said, and I used to say this even when I was a teenager, the guy you got to watch out for in a fight is not the guy that's always telling you how bad he's going to do whatever he's going to do to you. That loud mouth usually isn't worth anything. No, but the guy that's quiet, the guy that doesn't say anything, the guy that's not speaking up, the guy that's waiting for the real time to fight, that's the one you need to worry about. And that's exactly the one you need to look at as strong in this life. That person that's convicted, that person when put in that position when it is time to stand, that's the one that doesn't give for anything. But people earn a reputation for that. And you know, people are thought less of because they don't. This is the age of self-promoting. And personally, I'm not a big fan of that. You know, the idea of I've got to brag and I've got to put myself forward and I've got to tell everybody who I am and what I am, that's the way you get ahead. Well, maybe a certain part of that. But all of this, you know, name dropping and this and that that people do to make somebody else think well of them, it's just a little bit sick. But people earn a reputation for that. Now, finally, I want you to go with me to the book of Luke, and I want to look at two passages very quickly. Because sometimes you can get a reputation for being in a certain position as perceived by other people. Luke chapter 18 comes to mind for that. In Luke chapter 18, you know the story. Jesus told a parable here about people who wanted to justify themselves, trusted in themselves, verse 9, that they were righteous, and they looked down on or despised other people. You remember this parable? Publican and the sinner, or the Pharisee, rather. He wasn't a sinner. But the Pharisee. And the Pharisee praying to God, boy, God, I do this, and I do that, and I do the other thing. You know, that's self-promoting business. And God, I don't do this, and I don't do that, and I don't do this, and I don't do that. And most of all, God, I'm not like that over there. That public. And so he was comparing himself to one that he perceived as being the least in the world. And the publican here wouldn't even lift up his eyes to heaven in his humility, beat upon his breast, you know, out of his sorrow for what he had done, and said, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Now, who probably had the reputation of being a great righteous person in this parable? The Pharisee. With God and with good people for 2,000 years, who has had the reputation for being a righteous person? I take you to another passage, my favorite in the Bible, back in Luke 7. And that's the story of the woman. Was there ever a time in life like David when you did wrong? And people can know you for that period of time. People could bring up all kinds of bad things you did. If there was such a time, then you'd be right where this woman is in Luke 7. The reason I love this passage so much is because Jesus goes into this home of people that everybody would think, you know, are the most righteous, greatest people around. Simon and his friends. And then this poor old woman comes in. I say old. I don't know how old she was. But this poor woman comes in, and she is so guilt-ridden over her sins. She just bows down at the feet of Jesus, begins to cry, and wash his feet with the hairs of her head. And you know the story here. And while she's doing that, I mean, this great show of repentance and humility, when anybody ought to be moved to tears over it. While she's doing that, these bums sitting around the table are going, how come he's letting her touch him? You know, doesn't he know what kind of woman she is? And Jesus knows all of that. So Jesus turns to him. You know, Jesus is cool. So Jesus turns to him, and this is what Jesus said. Simon, I got something to say to you. Master, say on. And then he begins to talk about, you know, he tells the story here, and he begins to talk about the one who was forgiven of the debt, the big debt, the one that owed so much and loved so much. That's that woman. You look at yourselves, Simon, you guys sitting at the table, you look at yourselves as really not needing me for a whole lot. I mean, you got it going on. You're everything you're supposed to be. And you got a right, you feel, to look at a woman like this and say, if I were what I'm supposed to be, I wouldn't even let such a woman touch me. But I tell you, it's her that will go away today, approved of in the sight of God. Your faith has saved you, he says to the woman. You go with That's why I love this story. She had a reputation. Maybe it was deserved in the past, for the past. But what she did that day was turn her life around. And no one has the right to speak evil of a penitent person. No one. No one has the right to put a penitent person down. When you repent and you change your life, God looks at you right then, right where you are, and that is who you are. Gain that reputation with God. You will gain it with other people, but gain that reputation with God. Are you here tonight and you're not a child of God? You believe Jesus is the Son of God. You're willing to confess that belief and willing to change your life. Whatever the Lord wants, that's what you want to do in your life. Will you be baptized tonight? Be baptized to have your sins washed away by the blood of Christ. And are you here and you've done that? but you want to turn your life around.